Hey there, welcome to Season 3, Episode 12, which is also Episode 84 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and with me is someone who also decided to record a Retro Game Club podcast on the nicest day of the year, Hugh.
Yeah, I know. It's a big mistake on my part. Actually, the last 2 days have been pretty nice. So I spent most of yesterday outdoors and a little bit today, and I will probably go out on the patio tonight.
Yeah, I saw a mosquito yesterday, so I ran to Home Depot, which we're recording this on Easter. Home Depot is really busy on Easter. Ran to Home Depot, got a lawn insect killer and weed killer. So I put some on before this podcast, and we'll do more after. So big dad in the yard type day today for me.
Yeah. I have ground bees.
Oh, those are fun.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty docile. They don't attack or anything.
Until you mow over them?
Yeah. Luckily, these are in like an area that's just flowers. So I have to go to Home Depot, but I would not make the mistake of going on Easter in any weekend. It's horrible. I know this is off topic, but one of the worst mistakes I made in my entire life was going to Home Depot on Mother's Day, because I assumed no one would go to Home Depot on Mother's Day.
It's what they do.
Right. The answer is everybody goes to Home Depot on Mother's Day, it turns out.
Yeah, it's like a parade. And also, at your Home Depot, I know this is a Game Club podcast, but do you just run into people that just bring their dogs into Home Depot? Like, they're obviously not service dogs, and they're just bringing them in? Is that a thing?
So I saw one guy who looked like he spent a lot of time in the gym and had a lot of tattoos, and he was there with two pit bulls. Full, like, large pit bulls that were wearing, you know, satchels that basically said they were there to help him cope with his anxiety.
Totally normal. Just totally, totally acceptable. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the only dog sighting I've seen at Home Depot in recent memory.
It's like every time I go. It's crazy.
Yeah. Have you ever flown in and out of San Francisco before?
Once or twice, yeah.
Okay. When you did that, were there more dogs or people in the airport?
Well, see, both times would have been in the 90s or early 2000s, so that didn't really become a thing until, I think, past 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. I mean, it's literally like going to PetSmart.
That's funny. That's really funny. But anyway, video games. What have you been up to?
Yeah, what have I been up to, man? I've been doing some video games. I saw that Limited Run Games is doing Doom collections, Doom 1, 2, and 3, and they're on Switch and PS4. Now, I've already bought Doom 1 and 2 on Switch and PS4 because they go on sale for like $2 all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really fighting the urge to buy this collection too, because I have like every version of Doom 1 and 2 that's been made. And I technically have these games. I just don't have physical copies of them. But I think I'm going to resist. I don't know.
I have it on everything as well. And then I play it once, and then I get motion sick, just like I did in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why I do that to myself.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like I buy Myst on every system, even though I have to admit I don't really like the game that much.
Yeah.
I like the scenery. I don't particularly like the puzzles. But Doom has never got me motion sickness. I really like Doom. So maybe I'll end up buying them. I don't know. It's sort of like this weird idea of like, well, what if I'm living in a log cabin somewhere and I don't have internet access and I can't download this game that's like I already have downloaded or something. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
My reasoning is very twisted for why I must have a physical copy of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to all my other physical copies of Doom.
Yeah.
I put it off topic. I've been spending a bunch of time on my personal site here trying to upgrade to the latest version of Bootstrap, which is still in beta, but usually their betas are pretty stable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a nightmare. Do you use Bootstrap for any of your sites?
Yeah, and I've been waiting for the latest version to actually come out because it got rid of jQuery, which seems like it'll make it much faster. So don't blame me for wanting to upgrade.
It did get rid of jQuery, which is nice. It's also small. I mean, it means, I don't know if it really reduces the total size of the distribution because they have their own jQuery replacement, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
But stuff like every release of Bootstrap, I know people don't care about this, they break the navbar, and they did it again in this version. So if you use navbar, it's been refactored again, and you have to basically redo it.
Nice, really of course. Annoying.
Yeah. But that's, I'm going to be kind of working on that whenever I have spare time this week. What have you been up to?
I'm still playing Nier Automata. Have you played this game or know anything about it?
No, I know they do concerts for it. That's about all I know.
I could see that. So, Hugh, out of everyone I've ever met in my life, I think you would love this game. I really think this has your name all over it.
Yeah, I think so. Everything I've heard about it, it sounds like a game I would like.
But so, one word of advice for people. So, there's, you know, supposed to be like one ending for every letter in the alphabet. And I'm really glad one of my buddies told me, like, hey, just keep playing. Because, you know, I have a stack of games I want to play and not much time. So I'm not an alternate endings kind of guy. If I played it, I don't want to re-experience it just to see a new video. I could go on YouTube for that.
Yeah.
That's really not what this is. You're getting totally new story content and you're playing different characters. And I won't spoil anything, but it's definitely worth going through. Now, I think I'm on letter D or something now. And it gets interesting after the first ending. That's where the game gets great. So just a little bit of advice for anyone that might want to play this game. And I think it's wildly cheap now. I think on PlayStation Store, you get it for really cheap. So
Do you have to do it alphabetically?
I don't know, but so far, 1 through D, it's pretty much... There's no other way around it, so
okay.
It makes sense once you start playing it. You don't realize it's happening until it has happened.
Okay.
I have a feeling there is a way where, you know, later in the letters, it's not like that, because after it first came out, it's like, here's how you get ending Z or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, if they have to post an article about that, then there's something to it, you know, so...
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of games. I mean, I've played, you know, through the 12 or so endings of Chrono Trigger and a couple of the Chrono Cross endings. And as much as I like them, I could not play 26 times, you know, if that's what was required. But
And that's not what this is. You know, you play as different characters. I heard the next letter, it only takes like, you know, 5 to 15 minutes to get through, that kind of thing. Okay. So, yeah, I'm really into it. I didn't think I would be. I'm glad I kept going. So, yeah, and, you know, with work and family stuff, I'm glad I was able to play some games at all. So, that is about it. We have so much news that we've actually held back more news than we're talking about this time.
Yeah. Although... Some of the stuff we held back are things we don't want to talk about, so maybe we should...
We might delete some of those, yeah.
Speaking of things I might put on the banned topic list, Analog Pocket is delayed. The system designed for scalpers. Are they blaming the stuck ship?
The first blame was the chip crisis, I guess you would call it, which I totally get. I mean, you can't get a PlayStation 5 and... Even some laptops and graphic cards you can't buy. But this article on IGN is also blaming the Suez Canal ship for part of that.
Because there's a lot of oil involved in the production of the Analog Pocket.
Well, 370 ships were stuck, I guess. But I don't know how that would affect America, because I thought most of the stuff with the Suez Canal, I'm probably wrong. You know, listeners, whatever we say, don't believe anything you hear on a podcast or a guy on the internet or with a microphone. We're just two guys talking. But that said, is America really affected by the Suez Canal? I thought that was kind of between Asia and Europe kind of thing. But
that's what I thought too. But there could be. I mean, if it works like if it works like airline logistics, right? Like, you certainly had a flight. You've been in a city before where it's sunny out, but your flight is canceled because it's snowing in Boston, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, I'm not near Boston. I'm not flying to Boston. Who cares? But the plane, you know, that you're going to get on has to go from Boston to Kansas City and then Kansas City to wherever you are and so on. So it could be that maybe some of these boats were supposed to go to Asia and pick up PlayStation 5s.
Yeah, yeah. So, or whatever this is called, the analog pocket. Yeah.
Whatever chip it is they need.
Yeah. So, but I'm excited for this. Zach was able to get a pre-order. They said they're going to do more pre-orders soon. I'm guessing that got delayed, but I would like one of these things. You know, it would make it so I didn't have to hack my my Vita.
Yeah, it would be super convenient, but oh well.
Yeah, but there you go. Do you have $666,000 burning hole in your pocket?
I do not.
Then you can't afford this auctioned, sealed Super Mario Brothers NES cartridge.
Why is this more exclusive than the one that sold for like $100,000 or whatever?
Apparently, it is the best and earliest one ever found, and it's so pristine that it has the hang tag on it. So a hang tag that costs one penny.
When I worked at a game store, we had a drawer filled with them. Yes, continue.
Yes. So, yeah, so $666,000, an auction site in Texas. And yeah, I guess it's the most pristine one ever found. So it's the black box Super Mario Brothers box. And this is,
Did they say who bought it?
Not that I see here. Just a strange, for me, it's just a strange thing to buy. Like, I love Mario, you know, as much as the next guy, but you could buy it for $1 on eBay and, or have it on Switch for $20 a year or whatever.
Yeah, and they made a million of these.
Yes, and it's boxed. You're not going to, you're not going to open it. It's just going to sit on a shelf. And it's not, I don't think it's going to become more valuable because people like us are getting too old for this stuff. So, there you go.
See, today, meaning 2 weeks ago, marks 20 years since Sega left the home console business.
Yeah, that's sad. And it's sad it was 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember I went out. So, this would be the day that I bought my Dreamcast. Because I heard that Sega was exiting the hardware business and shutting down the Dreamcast. I'm like, oh, I better go buy one of those before they become rare.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I've told the story 100 times. Yeah, the same way you did. I got mine new or pretty much new for $35 with a few games and a VMU. Like, a great system for a great price. I think it still is one of my all-time favorite systems.
Yeah, it's one. I like it, but it's also one of my all-time least played systems.
Same, yeah, same here, and I don't know why.
Because it came out the same time as the PlayStation 2 and a bunch of other, you know, GameCube and other stuff that you probably played more.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so annual Sonic the Hedgehog hacking contest will be September 5th. That is the news article. If you want to participate in it, that is the deadline to submit your hack. They make some, we've probably talked about this contest before, but there's really great Sonic hacks that come out of here.
Yeah, yeah. So you have till September 5th, like you said, to submit your ROM. If for some reason you have to update it for whatever reason, like if it crashes or something, you have till the 12th. And then I don't know what expo deadline means, but that's September 26th. Yeah, I don't know what that means. But pretty cool. And if anyone can hear my kids in the background, they're deciding to go insane right next to the door next to me. An entire house. And yeah.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Something we speculated before the PS5 was released. Sony patented something to award trophies to non-PlayStation 4 or 5 games. So people are speculating that these trophies would be for PS3, 2, and 1 games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's for it references emulated games, so it's not going to be like you pop your PlayStation 2 disc into the PS5 and it plays, because Sony doesn't want any part of that.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate, because right. You could do that with, like, Xbox is all over that, and it kind of makes me want an Echo, whatever the new Xbox is called, kind of makes me want one. I've never owned an Xbox in my life, but I'm kind of thinking about it, you know?
Yeah. The thing is, if you own an Xbox, you have to get a tribal armband tattoo. I think that's a rule.
I think, yeah, or barbed wire, maybe.
Yeah, barbed wire, that's it. Yeah.
I hope we're not offending anyone.
I don't know if we have a lot of like diehard Xbox fans.
For me, Xbox seems like the system where it's like, you know, I'm only playing, I don't know, what's a shooter game? Call of Duty? Is that a big one?
Or Halo or something, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I buy this. This is my Halo system. That's how what I always thought of Xbox being.
Now, I think the Skyrim games might be. Are those exclusive to Xbox?
I think they are now because didn't Microsoft buy that?
Something like yeah. that, yeah. So yeah. I could understand. I guess I can understand if you're a big fan of those games, having to, you know, being forced to buy an Xbox. You might have to buy both an Xbox. If you're a big fan of RPGs, you may have to buy both an Xbox and a PlayStation, right? Just to deal with exclusives on either of them.
Yeah.
Because some Japanese developers won't even consider doing Xbox development.
But PlayStation 5s are a myth. They don't actually exist. So there you go.
All right, here's a good technical article from nerdlypleasures.blogspot.com. It is about breaking copy protection on old Sierra disc-based games.
So, I love this.
It's very, very technical, but it's a good look at, you know, what you have to do to defeat the copy protection, right, that Sierra implemented back in the 80s.
Yeah, really cool. And it looks like most of this is for the DOS port, so that's not talking about the Apple versions or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, using an application called SuperLock with no C. There is still a company called SuperLock with no C, but they do tube fittings.
There you go. Yeah, we reference Nerdly Pleasures quite a bit. This is a very good blog.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, it's one of my favorites. Resident Evil turns 25.
Yeah, on PCMag.com, a great article, kind of the actual history of Resident Evil, starting with Sweet Home and how they got to Resident Evil. So Sweet Home's not one I've played.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not part of the Resident Evil series. It's an old, was it NES horror game, Famicom horror game?
Yeah, and then they did a port to SNES, I think.
Yeah, was it the same developers? I don't...
Yep, I so in 19...
It was developed by Capcom, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably played a fan translation of it a long time ago. And I probably should... I don't know. I'll try it again around Halloween.
I'll put it in our... games we want to playlist so we don't forget about this one, because that'll be a good Halloween game.
Yeah So this was towards the end of when I was working at the game store when this came out, and many of our customers called it Residential Evil, and that's all I remember about it. Doom running on a digital camera. We always will cover any Doom running on something.
Yeah, this is the Doom running on stuff podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those bigger DSLR cameras, an EOS 200D. I have no idea what that is, but you can play Doom on it, and it looks like it's at about 5 or 10 frames a second.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have a video. They talk about other cameras that people have gotten Doom to run on, too. So, it's exciting.
Yeah, I guess if you're a photographer at a wedding and you get bored for a little bit, at least you could play some games, but I guess you also have a phone with you that you could do that as well.
Yeah, but it looks like you're working.
True, yeah. What do we got next?
Did Zach add this one to the notes? I think
it must be Zach, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy 30th Anniversary Edition.
Yes, so this is on bbc.co.uk, and you could play Hitchhikers to the Galaxy right in the browser, and it's a really nice interface.
I have this on Apple. I think I have the original discs for this on Apple too. I have to double check.
This is a game I have not beaten. I would like to I would like to finish this game sometime.
Yeah, the puzzles I remember are very non-intuitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, because we got backlogged on news, I have a second article from Nerdly Pleasures. Blah. I can't talk. That's a hard word to say. It's a hard combination of words to say. This is a review of Family Basic for the Famicom. So there was in Japan, the Famicom or Family Computer had an optional keyboard and a basic programming cartridge, which was much more sophisticated than the Atari basic programming cartridge. It looks like, again, this is Nintendo, and Nintendo, you know, is a better developer than Atari, no offense. And this is a much more functional cartridge. I would almost compare it to Mario Paint more than being a basic programming cartridge.
Yeah, this is great. And to show you how the human brain works, you know, the top image in this article has the Famicom keyboard. Mm-hmm. And because I saw the word Famicom and because I saw the cartridge, my brain didn't even see the keyboard. It just saw a Famicom. And it took me a while to actually, register that was the keyboard.
Yeah. Other than missing a D-pad, this keyboard is pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's in the Famicom.
They do a remake of it for, modern computers.
For Switch.
Yeah.
They should release on the Switch online service. They should have Family Basic. And then you could use this USB version of this keyboard. That would be amazing. We need to make that happen.
Yes, I'm sure this is a part of Nintendo's legacy they want to revive. Interview about porting SNK versus Capcom to the Neo Geo Pocket Color. Is that what this is about?
It was a game on the Neo Geo Pocket Color, and it's being re-released on Switch and a few other systems. And I
was reading it like it was about porting the arcade game to the Neo Geo Pocket Color, but this was always a Neo Geo Pocket Color game that they are now porting to Switch.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And every time the audio gate opens on my mic, I just hear my kid screaming. So, listeners, sorry.
That's all right. That's what kids are good at.
Yeah. But this...
By the way, it doesn't stop when they're older. I'm just going to warn you.
I know. Well, when I moved my audio setup, I used to be in a much more secluded part of the house. But I had to move, so I had a desk so I could work on, so I wasn't sitting on a couch and constantly being sore from working from home too much. So I'm kind of stuck here for now. So Neo Geo Pocket Color games being released on other systems, and these SNK coders who actually did the port are talking about it. So a pretty cool interview.
A project I would really possibly be able to get behind here. This is on Hackaday, and they created a floppy drive controller for the Raspberry Pi. And I've lamented for many years that there is no USB converter for 5 1/4 inch discs. Uh-huh. But this is about as close as you're going to get, right? Like you could, with a little more work, take this project, hook up the floppy drive, which is kind of funny to see it next to the Raspberry Pi because the floppy drive is so much larger than the Raspberry Pi. And then, you know, basically use it to copy disks from the floppy to, USB or whatever.
Yeah. I'm actually shocked it took this long to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is my favorite project of the week.
Yeah, looks like, is it plugging it right into the GPIO port, or is that a hat that it's plugging into? I can't tell.
It's a little hard to tell. It looks like there's an extra piece of hardware that you need.
Yeah, I was going to say there's no way that there's no way that the GPIO port would somehow fit an IDE ribbon cable. That'd be too easy. What is next? Oh man, this is maybe my favorite article this week. A canceled game called Clockwork Aquario is being released, and it looks stunning. So, okay. Yeah.
Sorry, you skipped like two articles, so I'm way off.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, let's see. Wait, let me go back.
I was reading a completely different article, and I'm like, man, Rob's really excited about that modular controller. sticking with things that have controller in the title, even though it's different, there is a modular controller being sold now where you can like pop the buttons out and change the layout, called the Cyber Gadget Gyro Controller Pro. Did you add this?
I need this in my life. I know I promised I'd be done buying controllers, but so it kind of looks like a Switch Pro controller, I think.
Yeah, same kind of body.
But you can, the on the left, the D-pad and the analog stick are like a little really cool, almost peanut-looking unit that you could pick up and flip around so you can make the D-pad on the top and the analog stick on the bottom. You could put different analog stick tops on it. So you could have like a really high stick or a really short one, like on the what would it be? I guess a Vita, I guess. But
yeah. Like you could have like a raised D-pad or like a sunken D-pad, it looks like. And same for the analog stick, you can basically put it in like a, I won't call it a joystick, but a more raised analog stick. It's just just modular. Like you can just swap out the pieces, put in different size pieces, different size shoulder buttons. And assuming it doesn't snap apart every time you try this, looks kind of cool.
Yeah, I really think I need one of these. Just one more thing in my life I will never use.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like it's going to be around $70, which seems pretty fair.
Another article that I guess we were debating amongst ourselves if this was a April Fool's Day prank, but it does not appear to be. And it is the Atari 2600 movie cart project, where someone is chronicling on Atari Age their attempt to play movies on the Atari 2600. It's pretty not easy to do, and definitely requires a cartridge with like a SD card, because I think he said each frame requires 77 cartridges. So it's basically like you're constantly swapping the cartridge. So not necessarily practical for the real world. Where's that number he said? He had some note on here. He said about like how many cartridges each frame was. Must be further in the thread because now I can't find it.
Yeah, I don't see it right now, but that's pretty funny.
Maybe it was on the GitHub page. Yeah, that's where they put it. But I was pretty impressed by this. I mean, that's why I don't think it's a prank, because he has a GitHub page and a bunch of code. Okay, I misread here. Each second of video requires the equivalent of 75.5 combat cartridges, or over 500,000 cartridges for a full two-hour movie.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. This really feels like an April Fool's joke, but
yeah,
there's code.
There's code, and there's examples.
Wow.
So that is a completely insane project.
Yeah, yeah. And so I did that one article early. Sorry about that. Did I miss any other articles?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right. I think last in our news is a great new release of RetroArch came out, 1.9.1. And it has, I mean, geez, the release notes are pretty long. But to note, a lot of 3DS updates, so actually having RetroArch on the 3DS, not emulating 3DS.
Yeah, yeah.
And
3DS seems like kind of a good way to play 8 and even 16-bit games.
Exactly, yeah. So apparently the 32X plays much better now on the 3DS. Okay. It plays PS1 games at native speed. And just a lot of other core updates, including you could finally update with the core updater. So RetroArch uses what's called cores, which are really just emulators. So, you know, 2600 has its own core, NES has its own core, that kind of thing. And RetroArch has the core updater where you just run it. Any cores you have downloaded, it'll get the latest versions of those. You could finally do that in 3DS. So I've talked a lot about how 3DS is one of my all-time favorite systems and one of my all-time favorite systems to emulate other systems on. So this is just another reason to do that. So I hope one of our listeners tries this out. I'm a little bit burnt out on playing with stuff to get emulation working. I really need a break from that for a while and just sit down and actually play some games. Yeah. So I really hope one of our listeners does this and lets us know how it works. Kind of in related news, it also got ported to OpenDingux. I can't pronounce that. D-I-N-G-U-X. It's like dingus with an X, which is an older Linux that runs on like older Raspberry Pi type Alibaba type systems. And so it's really not powerful at all. Like, I'm not even sure it could do the NES. Like, I think it's like Stella is the latest thing I think it could do. But yeah, so it does that as well. So a really big update. We actually do have, this isn't our last article. We actually do have one more really cool one.
Yeah, someone built a Final Fantasy VI arcade cabinet. So it's a cabinet styled after Final Fantasy VI that just plays Final Fantasy VI.
Oh, the marquee on this, the bezel, the side art. This is beautiful.
Yeah, it looks this nice. And I guess if you're trying to like get in shape, you can stand and play through all, you know, 40 or 50 hours of Final Fantasy VI this way.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, people should start building arcades into, like, exercise bikes. But I guess that's what a Switch is, huh?
No, I mean, we have this exercise bike where you can have, like, scenery. Like, it has a screen, and you're, like, riding through different real-world locations.
Mm-hmm.
I would use it if there was a mode where, like, you were being chased.
I was going to say, yeah, like a zombie attack or, like, wolves or something.
But just like I'm riding through like a hillside in Italy or something, whatever. I could watch that on, there's probably a YouTube video of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there was, yeah.
That is the news that I accidentally did some stories out of order somehow. I don't know how that happened, but hopefully we didn't miss anything. No big topic this week. So I guess it's game club time.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Sam.
I'm like really trying to describe the game you picked.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. So apparently, I chose Excel to play this week, pretty much. So, Sim Earth. We decided to try to do Windows 3.1 games, and Sim Earth was one I never played much, and I always loved SimCity. This is absolutely nothing like that at all, and. Yeah, so there's like, how do you describe this? In Windows 3.1, it's great because you have different windows that are open. So you have one for, you know, where you see the whole planet view. You have one that's kind of close up. You have one that's all, I guess, your sidebar where you could start changing atmosphere and geological stuff as well. And then you have like your Gaia window, which is this creepy nightmare fuel of an Earth staring back at you with a weird mouth, mm-hmm. making expressions.
And it talks on some versions.
Yeah, I muted this after a while because anytime something evolves, like an amoeba into something else, all of a sudden music starts blaring and, yeah, it was cool at the time, but after a while, it was just kind of annoying. But I am horrible at this game. So after you get, it kind of has the spore. It's, I guess you combine spore with civilization, where it's like you start as protozoa or even before that. And then, you know, Stone Age, Bronze Age, Iron Age, industrial, atomic, information, and nanotech, which is pretty forward looking for this being so old. I am not good at this game, and I did not really enjoy playing it. I could definitely see the charm of this in 1990 or 92, but I only play the Windows 3.1 version, and I admit I played it on archive.org. I usually like to try to do this in a DOSBox or something, but, you know, it was a pretty busy week. I tried it quickly with DOSBox, and my disk image was corrupted, so I was just like, screw this. You know, there's a quicker way to do this. This is on, I think the first, at first it came on a Mac, I think. But other than that, is DOS, FM Towns, what are the big ones here? SNES, Amiga, Atari ST, TurboGrafx-16 CD, Mega CD, and Virtual Console. So those might be a little bit better. I watched a video of the Super Nintendo port, and it gives you no direction at all. Admittedly, this game came with like a 30-page manual, if not longer, if not like much, much longer. But it was received really well back then, and I could definitely see that. And if I had more time on my hands, if I was retired or something, I could see myself really diving into this game, but I'm not, so I didn't. It actually made me want to play SimCity more, okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. Like, when you have really terrible pizza, the first thing you want to do is go get a good pizza.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, what are your thoughts on this?
So, I have the TurboGrafx 16 CD version. I have the actual disc and everything.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, well, I don't really know what I'm doing in this game. I ended up opening up, like, GameFAQs to try and just explain to me what I'm supposed to be doing, because it was mostly me just like launching meteor after meteor into my own planet trying to make something happen, which I guess is not a good strategy.
Yeah,
because you have to spend a lot of time managing like levels of things, like you call it Excel. That's exactly it. Like there are these various stats and nonsense that you have to try and track and balance to get life to evolve, I guess. And I didn't really understand any of it. I haven't taken biology in a long time either, though.
But still, you shouldn't have to take, you know, bio 101 to play a game.
Right. And then there's a lot of talking in the TurboGrafx version and a lot of tutorials, and they didn't help me that much. And this is just not a game for me.
Yeah, it made me want to play Civilization, and I've never played Populous, but it made me want to play Populous.
Populous is nothing like this.
Okay.
Other than you can, like, inflict natural disasters. Populous I actually like. But that's more of a, like, strategy-ish game. It's not really about terraforming as much as you think.
Okay, yeah. So this is a life simulator. I guess that would be a god simulator.
You're right. That's exactly. Populous is your... It's like you, and then there's a rival god, and you're both trying to, you know, help your people prosper. So you do some terraforming to, like, give them more, you know, land to work with. And then you may unleash volcanoes or floods or other things to wipe out, you know, the other god's followers. But the point is to get your civilization up to the point where they can then launch a crusade, like the Crusades, against the evil god. I guess good and evil are relative in this game.
It's like Biggie and Tupac.
Yeah, right. Exactly the same. And then you end up, you know, trying to storm, you know, crusade into your opponent's lands and kill off all their people. You don't necessarily have to crusade. Like, you know, if your opponent has built all their land very low, you could do a worldwide flood and drown all of his people.
Nice.
You built your people up higher.
But none of that you could do in this, in Sim Earth.
Right.
Oh, you might be able to. I just couldn't find the chart that would allow me to do it.
Right. I mean, it's basically two different, you know, to get theological here, right? Populous, you're a very omnipotent god, right? Like, you directly control pieces of land, and you can like directly assign orders to people. Like, I want you to start gathering to form an army. You know, you can basically command your people. And Sim-Earth, you're more of like a deist sort of being, right? Like, you're going to create the conditions of this planet and do some things, but you're not going to micromanage people's lives.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one god, like, in Populous, the god of Populous, if you said, you know, dear god of Populous, please help me score a touchdown in the Super Bowl, he might intervene.
Yeah.
Whereas the god of Sim-Earth would not even hear that prayer.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this one. I should stop picking simulators. They never work out for this podcast.
Like, please don't pick like Aerobiz, because if Sim Earth you found to be confusing, you don't want to do Aerobiz.
Is that a podcast ender?
I've tried it, and I know some people really, really like the Aerobiz games. But man, I was pretty stumped at what I was supposed to be doing in those two.
Yeah, yeah. That I actually don't know that game. Let's hop on over to yours, a much more straightforward game, kinda.
Yeah, Minesweeper, you know, it's just a default little game that came in Windows, and I know they've done ports of it to other systems. And, you know, the premise is, like, there's this board, and all the tiles are covered, and you have to figure out which squares have a mine underneath them. And you do that by, you know, flipping over squares one at a time, and you will sometimes get a bomb and then it's game over, or you'll, you know, unveil like any spots that are clear bomb free will open up, and sometimes you'll have a number, and the number is what, how many adjacent squares have a bomb. And sometimes those numbers are helpful, you know, because it's like, oh, every single adjacent square has a bomb, so you can flag all those and you're not to uncover those squares. And sometimes they're not helpful, you know, if it's a one or something, right? And it's a lot of kind of hunting and pecking to figure out, you know, where the bombs are. And once you've labeled them all, then you win.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just a big kind of little time waster game. People probably played more hours of this than Breath of the Wild in aggregate.
Yep. Yeah. I played this a lot in high school, and we had typing class, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they think they deleted the game by deleting the icon, you know, right. But I was a teenage hacker back in the 90s, so I knew how to, you know, find it
in the command. Run a game with the icon missing, that's pretty advanced stuff.
Yeah, that's hardcore black hat hacking. Mm-hmm. But, it's a game that definitely kind of has the civilization effect of just one more turn. You know, you really want to keep it going. And it does feel really good to beat this game, or even just pick the right square.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've not played this a ton. I played it a little bit here and there. I know some people put a lot of hours into it, mostly, I suppose, out of boredom.
Mm.
I was more of a, like, Microsoft Hearts guy in terms of default Windows games.
Okay, yeah, for me it was Solitaire, but... Sure. I would bet that more people got paid to play this game than all game testers playing other games that they're actually being paid to play and test combined.
Yeah,
because people are just at work playing this game.
Oh, I thought you were talking about because the fact Windows has been ported to, you know, 70 or 80 different languages, and the testers have to test every feature of Windows, including Minesweeper.
That too, yeah. But, yeah. What are you going to play for next episode?
That's a good question. What am I going to play? Oh, yeah, it's baseball season. I don't like baseball, but I do like some baseball games. And I'm going to go with RBI Baseball or any variant or sequel.
Nice.
Anything that's called RBI Baseball or even perhaps the Japanese game that RBI Baseball is based on.
Ah, I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, RBI Baseball is a port of a Japanese arcade game that I think is on TurboGrafx CD. I can't pronounce the name, but I might try that because I think it's pretty similar.
Cool. Well, I'm going to do Hudson's Adventure Island.
Yeah. Good game. Yeah.
It felt like a spring game to me. I think all of us would like to be on an island right now.
Yeah. Eating just jumping up in the air and eat. You have to keep eating fruit or you die.
Like, oh. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And skateboarding around. But yeah. So if our listeners play any of the games we've mentioned or have any cool retro news, events, I think events will start happening again sometime soon. Anything you want to talk about retro, please, please, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net, or Twitter at RGCpodcast. Big thank you to Zach for running all of those for us. And yeah, we do have some feedback this time.
Yeah. Later on in the feedback here, we have a very passionate defense of the Nokia N-Gage. Which
yeah.
We're looking at it. I guess I'm looking at it a different way now. Because I thought of it as being a very low-powered system. But we'll get to that in a little bit here. Majors writes in about a couple of things. He's confused about a comment you had about the 8-bit DO controller and the layout of the buttons. Because he thought what you were describing is how most controllers were made nowadays.
No, I'm talking about the bottom paddles. Underneath the controller, very bottom of the controller, there's paddles.
Yeah, on the back. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, the back would be, I guess. So the top of the controller would be where the shoulder and triggers are. The back, the bottom, is where the paddles are. If you look at a Steam controller, that's what I'm talking about. Not the L3 or R3 type thing.
Okay.
I hope that clears that up, maybe.
Possibly. I mean, I think I understand it.
I'm not good at talking, so it's good I have a podcast.
GameCube controller. Most of the reason they are so popular is because of Smash Brothers, which is true.
Makes sense.
And getting original GameCube controllers for Smash Brothers is very hard. Atari Lynx, getting it off the screen. He says he's a moderate fan of the Lynx, but agrees that playing it on the TV is superior to the console. And about exclusive titles for the Lynx, Blue Lightning, Electro Cop, these last two I don't know, Gordo 106, and Warbirds.
No.
And the Ninja Gaiden, which actually I played on the Lynx, is much closer to the arcade than the NES release. Same for the Rygar port. And that's, I think I have both of those games. And they are really the arcade version, not the NES version.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. Now, it's really slow. Ninja Gaiden on the Lynx is not very much fun.
it's like 2 frames a second, yeah.
It feels about it.
We had an episode about that one, yeah.
Yeah, not my thing, man. Panzer Dragoon. So this is a very early Saturn game, and he thinks it was the best release on it, total. Or best game at the launch time, I should say. But because it was a brand new franchise, he was working at a store at the time, and new Saturn owners were really hesitant to buy it because they had no idea what it was. Which I don't remember that being a problem, but this was a long time ago now. I mostly remember people buying the Saturn and then like complaining about how bad Clockwork Knight is. And then being really disappointed that there were like no new games for months at a time.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, because they had the surprise launch, but they didn't have any third-party games lined up. Sega Rally is apparently one of his favorite games of all time.
And nice.
He says he plays the Time Attack mode with no time limit. I don't know how you could have Time Attack with no time limit. He says you can just play it for hours. You can just go on like endless. It's basically like playing the game on an endless loop. And he says it's very, very good controls, and the graphics look amazing on the Saturn.
I think I just need like a game fact or to watch some YouTube videos or something. Maybe Majors, you need to put out a YouTube video on how to be good at that game, because I'm just horrible at this game. I'm doing something wrong.
They asked whether or not we will have an April Fool's Day show, and we did not. I did suggest one, and I believe when Zach heard my suggestion, he threw up. So that will not stop me from doing the episode in the future, but all right. So thanks for that email.
Yeah, I'll take this next one. Caleb writes in, he's been listening since the first episode and hasn't written in a very long time. Well, thank you for writing in again. We love that you're still listening. Oh, I can't believe we haven't bored you by now. Yeah. You've been through all the audio issues and everything. Anyway, he really enjoyed the King's Quest episode, and it reminded him of Peasant's Quest, which is a game that was in Homestar Runner, which I am a huge fan of Homestar Runner. I was always surprised that Homestar Runner never got like a Netflix series or anything. That's not what Caleb's saying. That's my my internal monologue there. Yeah. Yes. But anyway, Peasant's Quest was a Flash game, and it was actually not bad. So yeah, man, I'm gonna have to go back and check that out. I do remember being surprised by that back in the day. I'll have to go check that out. But he's been working on a really cool project during quarantine. He's building a shelving unit for 45 consoles and a CRT TV, and this thing looks beautiful.
It does, yeah. He sent us a picture, and it's huge. I mean, I can sort of imagine which systems would go in which slot on this thing, because they're all, he has many different shapes. So I'm guessing, he didn't say so, but I'm guessing he must have measured systems with cartridges in to make sure these were all spaced appropriately. I mean, that would obviously be terrible if you did not.
Yeah. So I have some questions and some demands from Caleb. So here we go. The question is, it looks like this is being built in a basement. Yeah. Maybe.
It does. But, because of the flooring makes it look like a basement.
And the ceiling, yeah. So I'm hoping that you're building this on the floor, that you're not going to move this, right? Like, there's no way to move this thing. It's so big.
Yeah, I assume. So it's the basement. I assume, yes, that you would be mounting it to the wall somewhere, because you have studs in your basement. If your basement's been finished, you have wall studs. Mm-hmm. I guess if you have the same concern I did. Go ahead.
And the demands are, please, please, please tell us how you're going to wire this all up.
Yeah.
Like 45 consoles, all to one TV, all to one or a few power outlets. I need to see the system you use, because I only have 10 to 15 consoles wired up, and it is a rat's nest. Yeah. And this is something I did last year thinking like, oh, I'm finally going to make it clean and neat. That never happened. So I need some inspiration, dude. So please send more pictures when you're getting that set up. I'm really interested in that.
I have a couple comments. Like I actually created a diagram in Google Drawings to remind myself of what systems are hooked up to which switch box and which port on the TV. Because otherwise I won't remember. I mean, I know I could just buy like a label gun, but I tend to move systems around a lot, so it's just easier for me to use a Google Doc or a Google Drawing to track all that. But I think when I look at this unit, like I think the long, short shelves that he has that would be next to the TV are probably for switch boxes. I'm guessing he's going to come up with a daisy chain of like 10 or so switch boxes. Depending how many input ports are on the CRT. Like if the CRT has two sets of AV ports, right, then you could daisy chain like 20. I don't know. I bought this box on Amazon that's like a 9-way switch box. I mean, you can buy like crazy numbers of switch boxes now.
Yeah.
So you can do that. My thing is, if it's going in the basement, is there going to be like another level underneath for when your basement floods, which they always do?
Oh, yeah. That is a concern. That is right.
Yeah, that's always what stopped me from putting like stuff, like games and stuff in the basement, is no matter how much you seal your basement, it's going to flood. I mean, basements are the worst. I need to eventually move to some place where I don't have a basement or a lawn or any other things that need to be maintained.
So you need to move into a skyscraper or something like that.
Yes, I need to move into a skyscraper. But it'll have to be once my kids have moved out, because I don't want to live in a condo with children.
Yeah.
So I'm still looking at this picture of his setup. It's really...
It's inspiring.
Yeah, like I can see like way on the right edge. I assume that's for like a PlayStation 2. The vertical one, the like long skinny vertical section, that has to be PlayStation 2. I spend a lot of time trying to like imagine which system is going into which cubby hole here. So on social media, we asked about Windows 3.1 favorites. We got some suggestions like Chips Challenge and WinTrek and Sim Tower. Someone wants to really like Minesweeper, but absolutely hates the way it works. Because there might be two blocks left, and whatever logic you try is useless. And you always pick the wrong one. And then, yeah, we have a big defense of the N-Gage here. So he had Sega. This is from someone who had Sega Rally on N-Gage. I'm not using their name because on email, I know it's implied we have permission to say your name. I don't know about social media. Even though I guess you can download the name of everybody on Facebook right now from some shady site. he had this game from working at a local GameStop in Funko Land. This might have been around the time they merged into the same company. He worked there through high school and early college, so kind of same story as me and I think majors. The Nokia sales rep gave him an original N-Gage and later the N-Gage QD. The QD was a very big upgrade. The N-Gage was definitely more powerful than the Game Boy Advance, with exact PlayStation clones of Tomb Raider and Tony Hawk. The N-Gage version of Sega Rally looked really good and played well. The QD version was actually a very capable smartphone, too. He still has them, along with 30 games, and bought almost all the PlayStation remakes, and it's a huge list. Pandemonium, Puzzle Bobble, Monkey Ball, and so on. After the QD came out and no one bought it, the GameStop he was managing started pennying the games out, putting 1 cent on them and throwing them in the dumpster, right? Which, by the way, they did when I was there too, but we would typically, just because like the guy that managed our store hated the idea of throwing games out. So mm-hmm. We would occasionally get stuff marked down to like 1 penny, and he would just sell them for like, he'd mark them back up to like 10 cents and put them in the clearance bin just to get a little bit extra revenue to the store. He didn't get a cut of it or anything. I think it was just some like refuse to sell games for 1 cent.
Yeah.
Like we got, you understand, like we were paying out like Neo Geo games at one point. This is not a joke. Like
that's crazy.
We got rid of the Neo Geo. Cause who's buying a Neo Geo? Like, let's just be blunt here. It's an expensive system.
Yeah.
And it'd be like Baseball Stars or whatever. And they'd be like 1 cent Baseball Stars.
And now it's probably $300.
Yeah, we marked like 97 cents or something and put it in the clearance bin. And the same thing happened with like the Turbo Duo. When that went out, it was like every game, just mark it down. Like you first mark them down to like $4.99 and see if anyone buys them. And then like a week later, you just throw them out.
Wow.
Yeah. No, seriously. That's how it worked back in the day. So I believe that even as far back as the Nokia N-Gage times, they were probably, I mean, he says they're doing the same policy that they did when I was there in like 93. So anyhow, so when they did that, he bought a lot of games or took a lot of games. He said, there's a really good WWE game called Aftermath, Mile High Pinball, X-Men Legends 1 and 2, and a Doom clone called Ashen. He said, graphically, it's not very different than the PlayStation. Maybe you could compare it to the original DS, but Sega Rally was a game that the sales rep, the Nokia sales rep gave him, but the store never had it for retail release. He's not sure why. They never actually were able to get a copy to sell. He said the original system had a lot of bad ideas. He remembers having to shut off the system to remove the battery to change games. Yeah, I heard about that too. And the phone had to be held up on its side to use the phone. The QD was better and fixed these issues. Plus, back in the day, you still had LimeWire and Napster. So you could, you know, have tons of music on this Nokia phone. Uh-huh. So he said he has 33 games. 10 of them are very, very good, and the others are average to bad.
That is great feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of want to play an N-Gage now. I mean, I guess I thought of it as being a, so here's where my bias came in. Like I was thinking of other cell phones of that era and the kind of like how games looked and played on cell phones of that era, mm-hmm. and thought, okay, well, the N-Gage can't be like much better than that.
Yeah, yeah, but it's an actual system, I guess.
So, off topic here, a while back, I bought a EverDrive X3, you know, from Amazon.
Yeah.
And I answered a question once. Someone, I forget what the question was. It was like, does this work in this model Genesis? I'm like, oh, I use it in that model Genesis. Yes. So now every time someone asks a question about the Mega EverDrive X3, I get an email from Amazon asking if I can answer it. All right. So here's an actual question that just came in for the Mega EverDrive X3. Can MacBook Pro download ROMs for this cartridge?
Wow. There's a lot to unpack there.
I'm not sure how to answer this.
I feel like you have to give it some kind of snarky answer.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I'm going to answer it. I might answer it. I might choose not to.
Wow.
Do you think they're asking whether or not...
Like, can you format the SD card correctly or something?
Yeah, I think perhaps they're actually talking about copying games to the SD card and not actually downloading ROMs, but I don't know.
Yeah, like they could be saying download from the computer to the SD card.
Yeah, which maybe. Some people use the term download for that.
For copy, yeah.
Yes. So I think I will answer this in a way that makes the person feel dumb.
That is great. Well, cool. Some inspiring feedback this week. So thank you, everyone, for writing in. And thank you, everyone, for listening to an episode that we have titled Sim Earth and Minesweeper. Yes. That was very bold of you to do.
It was, yes. Of course, if you're a big fan of Sim Earth, you're probably very disappointed and angry at this point.
Yes, which... then please write us and tell us why we're wrong in a very nice way. Yep. But again, our next games are probably a bit better. Hudson's Adventure Island and RBI Baseball.
Yes.
So, all right. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. And we will see you next time.